Hello, it's time for another episode of At the Table with Gail. I'm Peter Fleming, and I introduce Gail Hall, who is our resident chef, cook, and wonder person in the kitchen. Hello, Gail.
Hello, and welcome back from across the Tasman Sea.
Thank you, Gail. Yes, we had a nice week or so just over there in Queensland, meeting up with old friends, perfect weather, and of course the land of the huge prawn. Yum, yum, lots of prawns.
Prawns?
Oh, yeah, up the coast there, Queensland.
Oh, okay. Oh, beautiful. Mm. We don't do many recipes for prawns, so...
Well, you don't. We buy them frozen here, and you can get a lot of Chinesey ones, which we try to avoid. You can get Queensland prawns, but they're frozen. They're quite big. They're nice, but it's not the same as they're much cheaper, obviously, over there.
Oh, right.
Oh, we used to shovel them down when we lived there.
So what do you actually have them with, or do you just sort of stir-fry them and just eat them like that?
Whatever, stir-fry them or, just cook them and have them cold.
Oh, okay.
Massive prawn cocktails.
Oh, wow.
Or we do quite a nice one that we found is... You peel them and get rid of all the shells except the little bit on the tail, as usual.
Yeah, right.
Put them in a plastic bag with a mixture of spices, quite good spices, Indian spices. Shake them all about, leave them for a little while, just marinate, and then just fry them in a bit of oil on the barbecue. And oh, they nice. Just the sort of thing to nibble with your gin and tonic.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Well, I'm going to give this first recipe, and it's feel-good food, Peter. This one, and it's a chicken and kale power soup. So if you want to get up and do some weights or something, just make sure you have this the night before.
Right. Yes.
he's flabbergasted.
Where did I put my weights?
So we're going to start off with one leek halved, two carrots halved, three stalks of celery halved, four sprigs of thyme, a half a bunch of parsley, three bay leaves, 4 litres of water, a 1.8 kilo whole chicken, a third of a cup of raw rice and barley mix, 500 grams of kumara peeled cut into cubes, one bunch of kale chopped, 200 grams of cherry tomatoes. So that's all your recipes for this power food.
Gee, it doesn't say how many. What's that? Feed 20. 4 litres of water and a whole chicken.
Well, we'll just see what happens in the method, Peter. Yeah. In a large stock pot, combine the leeks, carrots, celery, thyme, parsley, bay leaves and water. Bring to the boil, then simmer covered for 3 hours. It's quite a long time, but you are actually making a beautiful stock. Yes, absolutely. So basically then, after that 3 hours, you're adding that 1.8 kilo chicken and simmer on low heat for 2 hours or until cooked through. Cool that, remove the chicken, drain stock, discarding the vegetables. Don't throw the stock away, please. Just throw all those vegetables that were away, put them in the compost. Remove meat from the chicken. Discard the bones and skin. Place the strained stock into a large pot. Bring to the boil. Add rice mix. Boil for 10 minutes. Add kumara. Boil for a further 10 minutes or until the grains and kumara are tender. Add the kale and tomatoes in the final 5 minutes. Roughly shred the chicken with two forks, because that's the easiest way to do it, and stir through the soup to serve. Now, this looks absolutely lovely in a plate. So I think it would give probably, because your stock will boil down. So basically, I think if you had fairly big plates, you'd probably get 6 to 8 fairly good plates.
You're showing me a picture there. Mm. I'm amazed at how whole everything is, despite the fact you boiled it and boiled it and boiled it and boiled it a bit more.
We're not boiling or simmering the tomatoes.
No. Oh, no.
You know, so that's a sort of a last-minute thing. And then you've got the...
kale and tomatoes, final 5 minutes.
That's right. Yeah, anyway, exactly. Mm. But looks beautiful.
Does look nice.
It does look nice. And that's what they call it gives you, a mixture of get up and go.
Well, could do with that sometimes.
But anyway, it's a power soup, and you can actually, have you ever tried baked kale in the oven, Peter?
No, but I think I've heard of it. Is that
just put it in the oven and it sort of crunches and
yeah. I was going to say when you said that, have I heard of people saying fry it in a frying pan?
That's right, or bake it in the oven. Yeah, it's I've actually it's a food I've discovered in the last probably 12 months, and I've had it taken out of the oven and it's just been, I don't know whether it's been sprayed with a little bit of oil and a bit of seasoning on it, but gee. New age stuff. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's a variation, isn't it? On that? So it is. It's something that we don't perhaps eat an awful lot of.
No, no. Well, I certainly don't. That's for sure. So we're going to move on from the soup now, Peter, and we're going to go to this, which is the golden frangipani galette. So this was sort of really appealed to me because it looked nice. And it's actually, like you say, you can open up the pantry and actually do this, you know. Even if you've got, you know, not fresh blueberries, but frozen ones. So we're going to start off with this, with 2 sheets of frozen puff pastry and let that thaw out. 2 Granny Smith apples peeled and cored. 1 tablespoon of lemon juice. 20 grams of butter. 1 tablespoon of caster sugar. 1/2 cup of blueberries. 2 tablespoons of flaked almonds. Now, that's your basic sort of recipe, but this is now the frangipani side of it. So 60 grams of butter softened, 1/3 cup of caster sugar, 1/2 cup of almond meal, 2 tablespoons of plain flour, 1 egg, and 1 tablespoon of brandy. So that's our full recipe now. So you're preheating the oven to 220 degrees Celsius, press the pastry sheets together to join them, then trim to a 25 by sort of 30 centimetre rectangle, like a slice rectangle. Then place on an oven tray lined with baking paper, prick the pastry with a fork, leaving a 2 centimetre border, and chill. Just, you know, just chill it for a while. Bake for 12 to 15 minutes, cool it down, press down the centre of the pastry, because you know when you're baking pastry blind, well, it does actually sort of get that sort of puffy. So when it comes out, just press that down and reduce the oven to 180 degrees Celsius. Now, the frangipani, in a food processor, pulse the butter and sugar until pale, add almond meal flour, egg and brandy, and process until smooth. And spread that evenly over the base, just leaving that little border at the side. Slice the apples and toss in the juice, that's the lemon juice. Arrange over frangipani, dot with butter and sprinkle with sugar. Now you're baking that again for 10 minutes. Sprinkle with the blueberries and almonds and then bake another 10 to 15 minutes until the apples are tender, cool, and then cut into squares to serve. Now, you can serve this, of course, with ice cream or cream, but sounds lovely. And this might be one that I'm actually going to have a go at doing.
Oh, I think you should do that. Bring it in next week. Yeah, that does look nice, doesn't it? Yeah.
Nice and simple.
Yeah, and it's a bit like you made another one bit with apples and dates, wasn't it? The bake that was a huge success. Yeah. And I would say this is going to be the same because...
And that 2 centimetre border, of course, you can just sort of curl it over.
I presume that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, just sort of bring it up a bit. You're not leaving it flat. You're just making a little, I suppose the shell of the pastry, of course, when you've turned it over. But that sort of keeps all your filling in and everything. Not that I think it's going to be running everywhere, but I think it's going to be fairly solid. But it looks lovely and looks not too bad to make. Now, while I'm saying this, Peter, I just want to mention to the listeners that you... made the Mexican meatloaf, was it? And I tried a piece.
Yes, that was a couple of weeks ago. Yep.
Was a couple of weeks ago because you've been away and I haven't mentioned it. But the first bite of that, I really enjoyed it. I felt that it had a lot of flavour.
Because that was the one that had the Mexican mix in it, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. And I thought it was very nice. So just letting people know if they see that recipe, I felt it was a great one.
And, the other thing that, well, you'd made it already, was the chicken and mushroom tart.
Yeah, which I did with the pastry. Is that one that we're talking about?
Yeah. Well, I made it according to the recipe.
No, and I tell you what.
You used flaky pastry, didn't you?
I did, and I regret. But when I saw your picture that you've posted to me on email, I thought, gee, that looks really nice with that dough sort of folded in.
It is very much a dough because it's plain flour and self-raising flour and baking powder. Mm. So it's got a lot of, it's almost like, what's the stuff? I've forgotten now. Anyway, it's a very light sort of dough. Mm. And then as you spread it out and then just like you've said for this one, just sort of fold it up. And
so what was on the top of that, of your, can you remember? What you put on the top, it looked like it wasn't asparagus
bits
or anything.
Of black. Well, it was. Because I think when you made yours, you couldn't find zucchini.
No, I couldn't.
And you used...
And I did find zucchini in the end.
Ah, right, okay. Yes. Well, I hadn't got it and it was a last-minute job to do it. So I got a tin of asparagus. Mm, mm. So I put asparagus in it underneath where it's supposed to have zucchini. Mm. And then I just spread some, laid some on the top. But, of course, in the oven, they got a bit... bit burnt and brown.
Well, the one on the tops, yeah.
Yeah.
But what was the flavour like?
Sorry, there's two photographs. Well, when it just came out of the oven, they were black. But then when I cut it and put it on a plate, another photograph, well, I put some fresh asparagus out of the tin.
Oh, that's I see. Oh, he photoshopped it, folks. He photoshopped it.
I put it on and took a photo.
but it was not. I know the original, that I made with the pastry, but that one looked really good when you took the first photograph.
Yeah, I say it was a very very nice dough, well worth sort of even to make something else with the dough.
Well, I thought it was well done. It looked lovely.
Right, okay. Good. And I thought it tasted nice. Anyway, well, that's we're about halfway through the programme.
No, right.
Music this week. Well, I seized upon the frangipani word.
Oh, right.
And you're probably wondering why I'm sitting here in these flared trousers with with a droopy moustache stuck on and... my hair sort of combed out.
he's gone strange since he's come back from Australia.
So if you could put this long flowery skirt with bells on the bottom or something like that and some flowers in your hair, because it's a little bit of a hippie type song that I've found for you. It's by Sam Madison and it's called the Frangipani Flower Song or something.
Oh,
like that.
Lovely.
We're not dancing.
No.
We're just going to sit back, close our eyes and go, om.
And absorb it. Oh, om. Now we're getting into Buddhism or something. Right. Okay.
So, here we go.
Frangipani flowers, and he'd lay says, I love you, and they cry. And she picks frangipani flowers, and she ties them up with yellow lace. She picks frangipani flowers, and she lays them on his resting place. Frangipani flowers, even though he's gone, she'll look not and never feel alone. Yes, even though he's gone, she's not alone.
That's it.
I'm
finished.
Still in a trance, sorry.
It's just that, it's sort of thing, isn't it? It takes you back, a bit of flower power. Frangipani flower power. Right, okay, what are we on to now then?
Well, we're on to a one-pot, you know, dish, and it's pumpkin and pine knot risotto. And I like quite light risotto, but I don't know whether I'm actually that good at doing it. But anyway, I saw this recipe, and pumpkins are out now, and let's make use of them. So we've got 500 grams of butternut pumpkin, peeled, deseeded, and just cut into cubes, 2 tablespoons of oil, 1/4 cup of pine nut, 1 litre of chicken or vegetable stock, 1/3 cup of sage leaves. And when I read that, I thought, I've planted sage and it's growing, so I'm really excited about that. 1 onion finely chopped, 2 garlic cloves crushed, 1.5 cups of arborio rice, 1/2 cup of dry white wine. Always seems to go with a risotto, doesn't it?
They
always
do like to put,
a bit of wine in it.
Mm.
And 1/2 cup of finely grated parmesan and 1/4 cup of mascarpone. Now, we're preheating the oven to 200 degrees Celsius, arranging the pumpkin over a paper lined, baking paper lined oven tray, and drizzle with 1/2 the oil. Season with salt and freshly ground black pepper. Bake for 20 minutes or until golden brown and tender. Scatter the pine nuts over the pumpkin and bake for a further 2 minutes or until toasted. I love toasted pine nuts. Remove from the oven and meanwhile bring the stock to the boil in a saucepan over a high heat. Reduce the heat to low and keep it a gentle simmer. So you haven't put anything in it yet, okay?
Right.
So it's just going to simmer on the stove there. Heat the remaining oil in a large saucepan over medium-high heat. Add the sage leaves in batches and fry for 1 minute or until crisp, and then transfer to a plate. I can just imagine the aroma coming out of that, Peter.
You know, that sounds good.
It just sound lovely. Add the onion and garlic to the pan and fry, stirring for 5 minutes or until softened. Add the rice and stir for 1 minute or until translucent. Add the wine and cook, stirring constantly until completely absorbed. Add a ladle full of hot stock. That's what you've got simmering on the stove, and stir until completely absorbed. Continue to add the stock a ladle at a time, stirring constantly and allowing the liquid to be absorbed before you add the next ladle. So that's your pot on the stove. Please don't forget to turn it off when you've got nothing else in it. Cook for 20 minutes or until the risotto is tender yet firm to bite and creamy. Remove from the heat, add 1/2 the pumpkin to the risotto, and just lightly crush it with the back of a spoon. Add the remaining pumpkin and just sort of stir it gently, you know, just sort of with a fork or something so that it's just going through. Stir in the pine nuts, parmesan, mascarpone, and 1/2 the sage. Taste and season. Spoon the risotto into bowls, then top with that remaining sage and serve. Now, that does sound nice. And there's a lovely photo here, and it does look lovely.
Yes, it does, yes. And that's retained the sort of lumps of...
Of pumpkin. So you're just sort of squashing a few bits.
Mm.
And And having that sort of stir-fried sage over the top too, I think, it's, you know, just sounds really lovely.
I'm just not a great fan of pumpkin.
Aren't you?
No, sorry. I know you Antipodeans are supposed to be rave about pumpkins.
Oh, okay. Any type, like buttercup?
Well,
or?
I mean, they always look nice. And I mean, a butternut, we've got... I cut a piece up and cooked for my wife last night.
But oh, did you?
I didn't have any. But many, many years ago when we first met, we were on holiday in the UK in the middle of Dartmoor somewhere. And we went into a little restaurant place and there was two boys running, two gays you'd call them now.
Yeah.
They're a really nice guy and they were Australian. And when they found out that Claire was Australian, one of them leaned in, I've got a pumpkin in the kitchen.
Truly?
Yeah, I've got a
pumpkin.
Oh, so
they associated the country with pumpkins.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, you're Australian, you're going to want so...
They
were thrilled to bits that they're going to put, and they've got an Australian in. Anyway,
that's the first I've heard.
That's a little aside there.
Yeah, lovely, lovely. Well, this next one we're going to finish off with today, Peter, is creamy bacon and kumara pasta bake. And of course, kumaras at the moment are plentiful. Few weeks back, they weren't. So I actually had a bit of a roast kumara last night, roast potatoes, roast parsnip, which I love, and yes, and a bit of broccoli, and it was lovely. So for this one, we've got 500 grams of pasta shells, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 3 rashers of rindless bacon finely sliced, or, you know, buy it with the rind on and just cut it off, 1 leek, and the white part only finely sliced, and leeks are out at the moment. I see they're only $2 each at the moment.
I had to do the shopping yesterday, and I'm always pleased to see it when leeks are a decent price.
Yeah, well, $2, and they're usually quite well-sized.
Mm.
And so you've got your leek, you've got 600 grams of kumara peeled and cubed. Well, 600 grams of kumara is probably about 2 or 3, but, you know, the size of them are quite great. 150 grams of baby spinach, 1 cup of fresh breadcrumbs, and 3/4 cup of grated tasty cheese. So that's our sort of basically the bake. Now, when I read this, Peter, I thought to myself, we're going to go back to I call it the Peter Franklin method now. It's
Peter Fleming.
Oh, sorry, Peter Fleming. Sorry.
Fellow Franklin.
Sorry, Peter Franklin. I knew a Peter Franklin once upon a time. Peter Fleming, sorry. Peter Fleming, I call this the Peter Fleming sauce. You know, when I think about it, I think about Peter Fleming sauce. So this one here is 60 grams of butter, and it's 1/4 cup of plain flour, 2 teaspoons of thyme leaves plus extra, and 3 cups of milk, 3/4 cup of grated tasty cheese, and 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard. Well, you can follow that method if you like, the Peter Fleming way, because, you know, it's just so great. So you can just put the flour, the butter, and the milk, and all those little extras, you know, all cold, and just put it on the pan and keep stirring it till it thickens. And I just think it's brilliant. So you don't really have to do all that sort of mucking around with it.
And it works every time.
It never
goes lumpy.
That's why I call it the Peter Fleming method. Yeah.
But you must stir it with a whisk all the time.
Oh, yeah, whisk, yeah definitely.
It doesn't take long. And then you throw the cheese in, of course.
You can throw the cheese in, yeah. Well, basically, Peter's right. You don't have to put that in. When it starts to thicken, you can put the cheese in. But it's just so great. It just saves a lot of time. So what we're doing is preheating the oven to 200 degrees Celsius. In a large saucepan of salted boiling water, cook the pasta following the packet directions. Rinse under cold water and drain well. Meanwhile, in a large frying pan, heat oil on high and cook the bacon for 2 to 3 minutes until golden. Add the leek and kumara, cook, stirring for 3 or 4 minutes or until tender. Now, for the sauce I've just explained to you, I'm not going to go through all that because I think you can do that. But if you want to do the old-fashioned method, you know, melt the butter, make a roux, blah, blah, blah. But this, you know, this way, it's just great. And when you've got that thickened, you just throw in the cheese and the mustard, but I would have thrown the mustard in as well because I'm sure that doesn't do any harm. Now, and make sure it's well seasoned. Now, in a large baking dish, because I think this is going to make, you know, quite a bit, combine the sauce with the pasta and the veggie mixture and spinach. Mix well to coat in all that sauce. Sprinkle evenly with the combined breadcrumbs and the cheese. Bake for 20-25 minutes or until the top turns golden and sprinkle some of that extra thyme on the over the top, and there you are. You've got your creamy bacon and kumara bake. Absolutely lovely.
Sounds good. That idea, yes, I'm looking at a picture, and it does. Mm. Yeah, that does look nice.
It does look nice.
The breadcrumbs and cheese on the top as a sort of crumble is very effective, isn't it?
It is very effective. Now, I'm looking back at this, Peter. Maybe you don't put in the cheese. Oh, you do. So basically, I guess you're just sprinkling some more cheese and breadcrumbs over. I'm looking at the recipe again. And, oh, yes, you have. You've got the 3/4 cup of grated cheese that go with the 1 cup of fresh breadcrumbs. And then, of course, you've got the extra cheese for the sauce.
Yeah, right, okay. Mm. Yeah, that sounds right.
I just wanted to confirm that.
Yeah. And the other thing I picked up on is the tablespoon of Dijon mustard.
Mm.
Now, a few weeks ago when you did the smoked fish pot pies, which were such a hit with myself and people at home.
Yes, that's right.
And again, it the whole lift of that, I think, from something different was the fact that into the sauce, as well as the smoked fish and the, was a teaspoonful of Dijon mustard.
Mm.
So what did I do last night? I did cooking again last night because my wife's got a bit of a cold. So I did. I just did a very simple sausage casserole.
Mm-hmm.
I threw a half a tin of lentils in and some mushrooms. Oh. Stuck it in the oven. But again, I put a heap teaspoonful of Dijon mustard in.
Wow.
Which I felt added something to it. Mm. She didn't notice it because she said, "Don't like mustard."
Oh, okay.
I think it's a great additive, don't you?
Oh,
it's
throwing out of the mustard, the Dijon is lovely.
Yes, because it's so
mild. It's creamy,
sort
of creamy as well, and it's mild too, but it just adds that little bit of flavour. You're quite right.
Yeah, it's a bit like a few drops of Worcester sauce or something.
Exactly.
As an alternative.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so
no.
Interesting to see that again. Mm. I think certainly to anything you're putting cheese into like this, think about it, it sounds right, doesn't it? Put some Dijon mustard in with cheese because it's the same sort of, it'd give you a tangy cheese flavour, would it?
Like a tasty cheese, you mean, sort of thing. Yeah, could do. Yes, I think so. But it certainly is a good additive, you know, for
it
a little
is.
Bit of flavour.
Yeah.
So there's our dishes today, Peter. 4 lovely ones.
Yep. And, of course, we're heading into winter, so they're all quite nice.
Well, they're sort of like good food, yeah.
Yeah, and as usual, I don't know how you do it. Perhaps you do it delivery. You pick on things that, as you say, you can open the pantry door and the fridge and say, oh, got all that. Got all
that's
that.
Right,
which
exactly.
Which makes life a lot easier.
Well, it is. It's good.
All right, well, there we are. We're just about at the end of the programme. Nice to be back.
Good to have you in the seat again, Peter.
And, we'll all be here again
next week. We will.
All right. Thank you very much, Gail.
Thank you, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.